Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/westwoodone.
Welcome to Orioles on the Verge. This is Zach Spedden, joined as always by Bob Phelan and Nick Stevens. And on tonight's episode, we're going to break down Kobe Mayo, who is putting together the best season of his professional career to date, down at AAA Norfolk, and offensively really showing that he has nothing left to prove against AAA pitching. On tonight's episode, we're going to break down how and when he could fit into the Orioles this year, whether he does fit into their long-term plans, and what the immediate future holds for him. We're also going to break down Fangraph's updated top prospects list for the Orioles farm system. But first, Orioles on the Verge is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for all your sports betting needs this season. From baseball, golf, soccer, right to all the top fights in UFC, MMA, and boxing. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game's over, head on over to our online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker, or unwind with one of our over 150 slots games. Head to the website today to get in on the action. Use promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, the game starts here. And in our most recent episode, we broke down Heston Kjerstad, who was recently recalled by the Orioles. So if you've not had a chance to listen to that, go back and check that out after you listen to this, where we're going to talk about Kobe Mayo, who since really the middle of last year has probably been a consensus top three prospect in this system. We've long known Mayo's traits as a prolific power hitter who has gradually improved his overall plate approach every season since making his professional debut in 2021. And that's reflected right now in his numbers at AAA Norfolk. Entering Monday's action, he was hitting .308 with 17 home runs, a 152 WRC plus, to go on to .382 on base percentage and a .631 slugging percentage. Between Norfolk and Aberdeen this year, he completed a rehab stint at Aberdeen back in June. He has 20 home runs on the season. He entered this year as a player who we thought could help the Orioles out during the season. He had performed well during a stint at AAA to end last year. He looked good in Major League spring training. And he's basically checking every box offensively, not just in the raw stat line, but in terms of the batted ball data, which is something we're going to talk about a little bit tonight. Bob, I will start with you. What stands out to you about Mayo right now?
Everything. I think we tweeted out a couple highlights on defense, some plays he made on defense the other day, which were absolutely remarkable. Defense looks like it could be good enough to put his bat in a major league lineup. He's hitting the ball hard and often he's not chasing. I think that article from Baseball America just pushed me over the edge, where every day he's not in the majors starting tomorrow is a day that the Orioles are worse at the major league level than they were the day before. So, yeah, I think I don't know if there's any prospect in baseball more ready to make his major league debut. And not to say he wouldn't struggle when he first comes up, but he is going to be a stud for a very, very long time. One of the best hitting, if just take away defense, take away everything else, just hitting, one of the best hitting prospects to come around in a while, in my opinion.
Yeah, we can talk about the defense. I want to talk about that article. I'm in the same boat in that we've been Kobe Mayo fans for a long time. There are a lot of people who've been Kobe Mayo fans for a long time. He hits the ball incredibly hard. The highlights are beautiful. They're glorious. We know what type of hitter he is, but like when you dig deep into the data and really get a more full picture of who Kobe Mayo is as a hitter, and this Baseball America article, I like Bob's wording there, putting him over the edge. It did it for me as well, because like this is, go back and read it. Like, go on our Twitter, go on the Discord, go to baseballamerica.com, go read it, sign up for a subscription, do whatever you got to do to read this article. It's Eli Ben Portat. I hope I'm saying your name right, Eli. He does, actually, I think it's every Monday he puts these types of articles up on Baseball America, these StatCast breakdown of prospects. He takes like four or five and kind of highlights something each week, but he acknowledges, like, he writes a lot about Kobe Mayo, but it's like, look at this EV, look at this monster home run. It's a lot of that, but he put together this piece, and it was a much bigger breakdown, and it was glorious. And there are nice, colorful, beautiful charts in this article to help break things down. And I kind of summarize it here. I try to do so in an audio format. I feel like I want to put the graphs up on the stream, but I don't want to get in trouble because it's behind a paywall. But he's got this chart, first of all, that shows the areas of the strike zone, the entire zone, where Mayo swings. And it is pretty heavily concentrated within the strike zone. He doesn't chase. Like, he chases very, very little. You see this, like, hulking, it's like, piss missile hitting phenom, and you just expect like swing and miss and the strikeouts, but you don't get that with Mayo. He's spitting on four seamers, even in the zone. Down in the zone, he won't swing at them. He feasts on fastballs up in the zone. And this is where, like, a lot of guys, this is where they struggle. It's in that same article, it looks at Jackson Holliday, does kind of the same deeper dive a little bit, and says, like, this is Holliday, according to Eli, to go off on a small tangent here. He believes that Jackson Holliday is going to figure it out. And a lot of his numbers look great in AAA, and this is working for him. There we go. If you're watching live on YouTube, Jackson Holliday is going to figure it out. No doubt about that. But one thing that Holliday is struggling with is like fastballs up in the zone. Like, this is what Mayo lives off of, though. He doesn't chase breaking balls pretty much at all out of the zone. But if you leave a breaking ball over the plate, he crushes it for a home run the majority of the time. Like, he's just sitting back and toying with these pitchers until they get frustrated or lazy for a second, and then he unleashes like that knockout uppercut punch. And there are two other articles in that graphics in that article where he breaks down Mayo versus each pitch type, and then against lefties and righties, and compares those to the MLB average. I thought those were very helpful as well. Versus righties, Mayo chases below the MLB average. His average exit velocity is 90.6 miles per hour, which is almost 2 miles per hour harder than the MLB average. His 90th percentile EV is 106.6 miles per hour, which is 2.5 miles per hour harder than the major league average. Against lefties, he crushes them. He refuses to chase. His chase rate is way lower. He makes more contact. His average exit velocity goes from 90.6 to 96 miles per hour, which is 7 miles per hour above league average. His 90th percentile EV is 109.5. He truly is. This isn't orange colored glasses. This is, oh, Kobe Mayo, let's drool over him. This is like, truly, he is an elite, elite hitting prospect. He's still got to prove it at the major league level. That's a given. But if he does, like, can you imagine inserting that sandwiched in between Gunner and Adley and Kerstad and Mountcastle even? Like, Eli said it in the article, like, once Holliday figures it out and Mayo's up, like, you are looking at what could potentially be a truly historic infield in Baltimore. Not just a historic Baltimore infield, but a historic infield in terms of like the history of Major League Baseball. And I agree.
Great, greatly said. Couldn't have said it better myself.
Now, I think everything with the bat is really well documented to this point. Baseball America did an excellent job. And as we talked about earlier, go check that out. If you're not a subscriber to Baseball America, subscribe to read that article and all their other great content over there. We can, you know, slice it and dice it with the offense anyway, and it's going to tell the same story, which is that Kobe Mayo is an elite all-around hitter at the AAA level, and he has the potential to do that at the major league level. Now, the one thing I know that we get pushed back from our listeners on sometimes is the defense, specifically the throwing errors. And we know that this was something that the Orioles were working on with him. He was using a different throwing motion this year. The early returns in spring training about that were very good, but his error total at AAA has been driven by throws to some extent. So do you guys think that the defense at this point is a reason to keep him down in AAA, or is this something that somehow works itself out if you bring him up to the majors this summer?
Well, for the record, he has 7 errors on the season. It's not like he's got 25 errors and is throwing the ball all over the place every time he touches the ball. And 3 of the errors, I think, were like from the first weekend of playing. Obviously, I think the defense is overblown. You saw those highlights. I think Ramon Arias made a nice play over this past weekend, and someone somewhere made a comment, see, that's why he's there and not Cobie Mayo, because you need someone that's going to make plays like that. Well, yeah, it was a great play, but Cobie Mayo can make that play too. Like, he's got good hands. It's not like he's known for dropping the ball, not getting to the ball, and his arm is a cannon. And yeah, most of his errors are on throws, but I mean, when you bring this kind of bat and just say you're slightly below average, I think that's being as fair as possible. I think he could be average right now, but just say he's a little bit below average with the glove. The way he hits, it more than makes up for any of that. And I don't know. I think also once he gets to the majors, he's just going to get better and better on all facets of his game, defense, offense. When you're with the major league coach every day, you have cleaner fields with better hops. It's just incredibly overblown.
Yeah, at least 2 of his errors were because he slipped in the dirt. Like, it's not his fault. My only argument is to the defense. That is another thing too. It's a lot of people who have never seen him play that say he can't play third base because they just parrot what other people hear and say. With Mayo, my argument is, why is he not playing first base at Norfolk? Why is he not playing the outfield in Norfolk? He's learning he's practicing there, but he has yet to play a game in the outfield. He's played 9 games all year at first base in Norfolk. He had, almost 30 games, I think, last year in Bowie at first base, and I thought we'd see him play more first base this year down in Norfolk. I thought by now, I know Bob said this before, as soon as he makes that first start in the outfield, it's like he's coming up to the majors. Why is he playing every night at third base down in Norfolk? If the team felt like
he can be a third baseman.
Yeah. If the team didn't feel like he couldn't play the position, they would be moving him around like they did with Connor Norby. I feel like with Westberg, that was more like we want this bat in the lineup. We need to get him up. He can do it. With Mayo, it's like you've got that 70 grade arm, an incredible arm. If they had questions about the defense at third base, that they didn't think he could improve it and be a viable third base option, then yeah, they'd be using that 70 grade arm out in right field down there at Harbor Park, but they haven't one time. That's my argument. I don't see any reason as to why he can't become an adequate third baseman at the major league level. And my thing, I don't know if I said this on the show or not, but before the season started, I was fine with letting Ramon Arias start. Like, that's a veteran. The glove is trustworthy, but you are going to reach this point in the season where what Cobie Mayo brings you offensively greatly exceeds any dip in defense. You're going from Ramon Arias to Cobie Mayo, and you're going to have to make that move. And I think we've reached that point where what Mayo could potentially give you with the bat, whatever you lose in defense, it doesn't matter because he's going to help spark this offense.
He's undeniable. Right now, it's July 1st. We have 3 months left in this season. He needs to get his feet wet at the major league level because he's going to be a weapon in the playoffs for the Baltimore Orioles this year. And I'm just getting chills thinking of the next 6 years, hopefully more, of Gunnar Henderson and Cobie Mayo on the left side of an infield and what they can do offensively back to back in a lineup. Dear God.
I'll say this about Mayo's defense. My opinion is that I've always thought that Mayo's footwork is underrated because everyone looks at the size, 6'5", 230, and thinks, oh, well, he's going to fill out and he's going to move to first base. He's pretty nimble. He's got good footwork over there. He can get to some balls you don't always expect him to get to. At this point, it's really just a matter of improving the throwing accuracy, which I know is more difficult than I just made it sound. But for anyone that's concerned about that, and who thinks that it would somehow hurt the Orioles to put Mayo out there. A couple of things I would bring up. Number one, the Orioles don't have to put him at third base if they feel like his defense is lacking immediately. They still have Jordan Westberg there. And you have Jorge Mateo to play second base. And I know that Mateo's bat leaves a lot to be desired, but he does a pretty good job over at second. His speed adds something to that lineup. That gives you some flexibility. That gives you some room to work with, that if you don't have Arias there, you still have other options, that Mayo can DH some nights. And I fully agree with Nick. If the Orioles didn't think that Mayo could play third base in the major leagues, he would probably only have, he's got 43 games at Norfolk there this season as of Monday night. He might have half of that if the Orioles didn't think he could play third base, because the rest of his time would have been split between right field and DH or first base. But instead, they're still running him out at third base. I think that they think he can play third. And look at how far Gunnar's defense has come in the last year and a half. I would not have necessarily predicted this time last year that Gunnar Henderson would not only be an everyday shortstop, but one of the top contenders for a Gold Glove Award at year's end. And yet, that's exactly where he stands right now. If the Orioles could do that with Gunnar Henderson, why can't they do that with Kobe Mayo? And maybe that's not a question that you answer in 2024, but certainly by this point in 2025, I think you can get there.
Great point. What I was about to bring it up. Remember, Gunnar had way bigger throwing issues than Kobe Mayo does. I mean, way bigger. Like, again, strong arm. He was a guy that was throwing it all over the field. You could see, like, if he could just get a little more under control, and especially when he was playing third base early last year, I felt like you saw it even at the major league level. But he's made huge strides. Like you said, I'd be surprised if he's not a Gold Glove finalist and potentially win the award this year. So, yeah, just excellent point.
And it's the throwing errors. Like
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/westwood1.
Also, I don't know who's been the primary first baseman down in Norfolk, but like right now it's like Garrett Cooper. I think tonight was the new guy. I don't know, based on the camera angle, I know he had a throwing error tonight, like right before we came on air. Garrett Cooper dropped the ball, but I don't know if like that was catchable. Like if that's Ryan Mountcastle, he gets up to the major leagues, he's got a Gold Glove caliber first baseman in Ryan Mountcastle up there that can help save him. He saves a lot of other guys up there too. So like, and speaking of Ryan Mountcastle, like Ryan Mountcastle, I remember watching him in Norfolk. The guy didn't know where to put his feet at first base, and now he is a potential Gold Glove first baseman. So that's another example of the Orioles taking these athletic infielders and improving that defense. Like I don't know, I'm so sick and tired of the Kobe Mayo can't play third base. Like, watch the game. Just watch him play and you will think differently about his game at third base. And again, if the Orioles didn't believe it, he wouldn't be there. And you call him up to the major leagues now, it seems like this entire lineup is going to be an all-star. So like, there's no all-star break for this team. Gunnar Henderson is going to do the home run derby. I wouldn't be shocked if Major League Baseball is like, we want Adley versus Gunnar in the home run derby. They're not going to do that. It'll be one Oriole, but it's just Gunnar. But like, Gunnar's going to be in the home run derby. He said a month ago how tired he is, or Brandon Hyde was talking about how tired he is. Ryan Fuller saying, we don't see that. Yet this guy's going out there every single night. Gunner's going to need some time off. Westberg's going to need some time off. This is also still a very young team. Like Westberg, Gunner, Mountcastle's a veteran now. This is still a very young infield. And so if you bring Mayo up, Mayo is not going to play every night, but he doesn't need to. He can be put in this lineup, help spell guys, give them their breaks, come in and be a brand new energy for this lineup. And he can play third base. I don't see them putting him at first base, but third base DH, you get him in there, move things around. That's where, and they've got the machines. Like, Mayo's not playing tonight. Oh, well, you're going up against, I don't even know if they play Cleveland again, but Tanner Bibee just came to my mind. Don't ask why. We're going up against Tanner Bibee tonight. Mayo, you're not playing. Guess what? They got a machine that can mimic Bibee's fastball down to a spin rate and everything else. Like, okay, he goes, takes hacks in the batting cage against that machine, against Tanner Bibee. He gets his defensive work in the pregame, and he sits in that dugout, and he picks the brain of Ryan Fuller. He picks the brain of Santander after an at-bat, or Gunner after an at-bat, and he learns, and he grows, and he develops. Like, there's room for Mayo to make this team so much better downstretch.
And one point I just thought of, it goes back to Kerstad on our last episode, and with Mayo as well. Even the games when they're not starting the game, they're still available later in game. Talk about some impact bats that you can bring in late in games. I mean, it speaks for itself.
There's always a question of how Mayo would fit onto the roster. And I'll put this to the two of you. How do you put Mayo on the roster tomorrow?
Bye-bye, Ramon. Ramon Empire was destined to fall. It fell in history. And unfortunately, it's got to fall. And something better will be built behind it. I don't know where this metaphor is going, but yeah, I think it's Ramon Arias. Maybe you can find a training partner, but it's probably going to be have to be after you DFA him, just like Mike Bauman situation. So yeah, and I think, unfortunately, yeah, he's a veteran, solid player, could probably start on a bunch of teams out there, but this is realities of life. We have these types of issues now where we have too many good players, and it's just what has to be done.
Yeah, I agree. He's expendable now, and Mayo's up. He's going to change his offense. I truly believe that. So,
yeah, make that unanimous. I think that's how you fit him on the roster. We've been waiting for Arias to hit. It hasn't happened yet. And when you look at the numbers, the defense has been down in the last couple of years. So that, to me, is the obvious move. I also, for reasons we got into in the last episode, just don't see Mayo getting traded, because the Orioles have a farm system that's deep enough to make a move without dealing their top-tier guys. And that's something that we're going to focus on coming up here in a moment with our discussion on Fangraphs. Bob, you got something for us?
Yeah, this was one point I wanted to make, actually. When people say, you got to trade Bisaccia or Mayo to get an ace or to get whatever, teams don't trade their elite talent. They just don't. And yeah, they might be our second and third best prospects on most rankings, but they're still top 10, 15, 20 prospects in baseball, and they are elite talents, and they're not going anywhere. Teams keep those guys. They trade the Norbys of the world, unfortunately for him. You know, I like Norby a lot, but they trade the Dylan Beavers of the world. They don't trade the Coby Mayos and Samuel Bisaccias of the world. That's my last thing.
We have a lot to think about between now and the trade deadline.
We do. And while we're trying to figure out how to fit more Mayo into our baseball diet, I've also been fitting more Magic Mind back into my morning routine. Answering the question, like, how can I get through this day with enough energy, is a lot easier to answer than how do we fit all the prospects into this Orioles lineup. But like, you guys know Magic Mind reached back out. You guys are drinking it. I'm drinking it. We're doing the 3-7-14 challenge, where we're taking one of these mental performance drinkable shots each morning along with our daily coffee. We're not eliminating the coffee. We need that. We like that. We enjoy that. But we are adding Magic Mind to that morning routine. We're 3 days in now, and I don't know about you guys, but I'm already seeing the positive effects. We all have a lot on the table: kids, full-time careers, summer vacations, like we talked about at the beginning of last episode with small kids. That's exhausting. But after adding the Magic Mind to the morning routine, I really do already feel myself being more productive with that clear, focused mind. These things are packed with mushroom nootropics, adaptogens, all the vitamin C and D you need for the day. I know the ingredients are natural and safe compared to the energy drinks I used to rely on. And instead of giving up my morning coffee, like, Magic Mind helps extend the life of that coffee. And we're, again, only 3 days into this challenge, but I'm already feeling better. I also feel good knowing that Magic Mind was created with a scientific advisory board of doctors and medical researchers. The ingredients are organically grown. And best of all, 5 cents of each bottle is 5 cents of each bottle sold is donated to mental health charities that help U.S. homeless communities. So double bonus when you're drinking Magic Mind each morning. I encourage all of you listening, join us in this challenge. Magic Mind is 100% refundable for up to 100 days after your purchase. So there's no risk in giving this a try. You have a limited time offer you can use now that gets you 48% off your first subscription or 20% off a one-time purchase with code ONTHEVERGE20, that's 20, at checkout. You can claim the code, the discount at magicmind.com/ontheverge. You won't regret giving this a try. Claim your 48% off subscription with ONTHEVERGE20 at magicmind.com/ontheverge.
And Magic Mind helping us dive into this list over at Fangraphs, prospects 1 through 45 this year, Eric Longenhagen joined by Travis Ice in putting together these reports. And as is the case every year at Fangraphs, very detailed analysis of every player ranked on their list from Jackson Holliday at number 1 to Dean Pinto at 45. You can get this article over at Fangraphs in its entirety for free. It's not behind a paywall. We're not going to step on their work entirely tonight, but this is one of our favorite lists done by another outlet to analyze each year. Usually we have it, if not by opening day, then earlier in the year, but the Orioles falling more towards the midseason publication this year. And I know that we each kind of have our takeaways from this list, but Nick, I'll start with you. Once again, an interesting, well-researched, well-reported list. What jumps out at you?
Yeah, it's a fun list because Eric is not afraid to be different. And one thing that I do, of course, like every list, you can nitpick it. You can challenge it. There are things that stand out that make you say, what are you thinking here? But at least like he backs up a lot of this with like hard data. He compares that data that he's getting, that he has access to. And it's even down to the DSL guys, he's pulling up, you know, batted ball profiles and data that is awesome to read some of these nuggets, especially on the lower level guys. But like he takes that data, he takes the player's profile and then compares that to major league guys and previous comps and says like, can this succeed at the next level? And that's what I like about this list. It's definitely some interesting names on here. The Brandon Young hype train is for real. Apparently he's up number 10 on this list. We could talk about a little bit more about Brandon Young when we dive into our top 50 update later on tonight. But I think one thing that is matches up well to, spoiler alert, to my personal top 50 that I submitted for our list, a lot of pitchers high on this list, a lot of very young pitchers high on this list, which I love seeing. We keep saying you're the pitcher, and it looks like some of these national outlets are starting to agree a little bit more.
Yeah, Travis Ice, baby. I got to say, the most notable thing to me is that Matthew Etzel is nowhere on here, not even the honorable mentions of other notable players. Mm-hmm. That's kind of strange to me. Maybe just an oversight, but yeah, very interesting. Like, I love some of the aggressive takes here, like Michael Fauret up at 17. I love it. That's awesome. But at the same time, like, where is it? There was someone that was really low. Trace Bright at 32. Obviously, you can pick any list. I like when these lists come out because it definitely gives something to talk about for good or bad. But I enjoy more reading the descriptions and the breakdowns than just looking at the list and saying, oh, why is this person here and this person there? I think if you read what they say, you could see that you're probably not as far off as you may think just at a glance. So I'm glad this finally came out. I know Eric is definitely stretched pretty thin at Fangraphs being the prospect guy. So, yeah. What do you think, Zach?
What always jumps out at me about Fangraphs lists, and it's true this year, is that when I look at the raw ranking initially, it's, how did they come up with that? And the perfect example for me this year is Matt Horvath down at number 25. He's much higher on my personal list. I've had him kind of in the 12 to 14 range on my list all year. That was true when he was off to the slow start. That's true after a really hot month of June. And what's even, you know, what makes this situation even more of a head scratcher at first for me is that he's three spots behind Tavian Josenberger, who I like, but I have in the low to mid 30 or upper to mid 30s on my list. So he's not even inside the top 30 of mine. But when I read the two reports, I agree with the assessments of both players. I agree with the assessments of their strengths and weaknesses. I agree with the assessment of their risk. And this is where it's important, I think, to distinguish that Eric and Travis both had input into the rankings, because it notes they don't agree on Horvath's projection on defense. Eric sees him more as a possible outfielder, whereas Travis sees him as an infielder. And I don't know how that affected the aggregate ranking. I'd be curious to learn about that. But I think Horvath is better than the 25th prospect on the list. But when I read the report, I think they're generally accurate in how they see him as a prospect.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess the other one of note, like the top 15, 16 is pretty normal, other than Connor Norby's all the way down at 19, which seems strange to me because he's consistently put up great numbers at AAA for 2.5 seasons now and has showed pretty well at the major league level. But that could be a defense thing as well. But what do you guys think about Norby being that low?
I think it's the defense. Like, when you look at this list, it's very clear that I'm trying to pull up his blurb real quick. But like Zach mentioned with Horvath and Josenberger, I think there's a note in Josenberger's blurb, like they view him as this kind of defensive replacement off the bench at the major league level as he develops. And with Horvath, like, if you think he can be an okay outfielder and definitely not an infielder, like, he's already got a questionable hit tool. Like, I agree. I get why you'd rank him that low. And I feel like Norby is a product of that as well. Eric has been brutal on Norby's defense since he was drafted. And it's, so if he thinks he can't play second base, and then you move him to the outfield, and it's like, is he really going to be that great of an outfielder? Okay. I think that's why he gets knocked. And the strikeout rate, I think that was something else that he really highlighted here. And I think there was some discussion of that even in Discord earlier today. Like, Norby striking out a 30% clip, just above 30% clip in AAA so far. Like, is that something to knock him for? Or is that just like, it's baseball, it's 2024, and you think the Orioles like aren't that concerned? From an outsider's perspective, though, from a national list, national guy covering this list, I could see why you would drop him that low. I think it's too low, but like, it's defensible at least a little bit.
Yeah, that's, we know, kind of, he was pretty harsh on Kowser's defense. Turned out to be to be wrong on that one, but yeah, I think as far as the Orioles are concerned, from what I've heard, they don't really care about the strikeouts. If the strikeouts come with the damage when you make contact, I think that's what they would prefer. But who knows?
Yeah, I think the defense definitely dings Norby, and there's also a note in there about the underlying data not always being as impressive as the pure stats at the plate. I know that for myself, I think that Norby's an adequate second baseman. I don't think he's going to be a perennial Gold Glove contender over there, but the defense is, in my mind, passable enough when you pair it with the bat that he'll stick there every day. But, you know, when Eric was on this show a few years ago, he talked about how his standards for shortstop defense are really high. And I think that my own personal interpretation when I look at his reports is that they're high for players up the middle. So he's probably going to put a tougher grade on a player who, like Norby, has to stick up the middle, in this case second base, on his defense, because if the defense is subpar and there are questions about the bat, then yeah, he is more of a 15 to 20 prospect rather than a top 10. Do I agree with the ranking? No, but again, as Nick said, it's defensible.
Yeah. But it's like Bob said.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwood1, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwood1 now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/westwood1. /Westwood One.
Read the blurbs. Like, take the list for what it is. I know it's fun. It generated some conversation and a little bit of buzz. I feel like some Orioles fans just like, Fangraphs? Nope, not reading it. And then other people are like, it's July. Like, this is out pretty late. Like, okay, we know who the prospects are now. I get that. But, like, go through and read these blurbs, though. Like, there's a lot of confirmation and a lot of things. That's why I enjoy these national lists so much, especially ones. This one that's coming out later and chock full of these like critical like data nuggets. It's confirmed. It's made me question some things about my own list, which is good. I definitely disagree in major areas, but at the same time, there's a lot of confirmation in this list and in these blurbs of guys who are like, I've been seeing this. We've been talking about this. And then Eric's like, well, here's the data. And it's proving this. Like, and then just some of these interesting nuggets, like Samuel Basayo, he calls him a gear-wearing Rafael Devers. Like, I'll take that. And saying he had plus-plus power projection, and his peak exit velos and hard hit rate are already plus on the big league scale, and he's doing that as a teenager in Double A. Like, that's fun. Creed Willems hit a ball 116 miles per hour this year. Like, that's fun. And to see him as a top 30 prospect in this system, there's some guy, and to see some guys like even Armbruster, I know, but even Armbruster, it's like he's adding velo, and that's something to look at. Like that's a sticking point. Armbruster hasn't been good this year, but there's a good point to look at that I'm going to look at going forward. And 6 shutout innings with no walks, 5 strikeouts against Charlotte last time out. Like Eric notes in his report, this lack of control he's experiencing this year, if that's just a blip, like there's still a chance Armbruster could be a contributor at the next level, even if it's just as a reliever. But like little nuggets like that, what can we watch for moving forward with some of these guys? Things like that I really enjoyed picking up in this article.
Well, and there's a lot of good data about players at short season levels too, which we know is hard to come by, you know, whether it's Miguel Rodriguez, who actually makes the main list. I've been impressed by what Rodriguez has done so far this season in the FCL, but Eric kind of puts some things into context. There's something there with that bat. The defense behind the plate leaves something to be desired, but there's definitely something there with that bat. And then even some of the players who are in kind of the honorable mention categories, like Enyudis Mordan, Andy Fabian, Juan de los Santos, some guys that we've talked about off and on this year. Definitely worth checking that out. Before we wrap this part of the show up, though, was there anything else that jumped out at you guys?
I would love to know where he would put Etzel. He was in the Orioles organization.
Yeah, that is a good one. That's a pretty glaring omission. Also, Luis Almeida not on the list and gets like a secondary shout out on the rookie level sleep. No, the young infielder section. Braylon Tavera, again, I don't think he's ever been on this list, maybe except like when he first started. He does put an Oswaldo Cabrera comp on Aaron Estrada, or says like there are scouts who liken Estrada to Yankees Oswaldo Cabrera. That's fun, because last year I feel like in the DSL we're just like, this kid hits a lot of singles and maybe some doubles and steals some bags, but now we're seeing some pop. But it's interesting that like some of the international guys are fun and highly ranked, but others, like these big dollar guys, Almeida and Tavera, not on the list, and technically not even on like the secondary list down there at the bottom. That's interesting.
And quick shout out to Scout the Stat Line, who had their top 100 hitting prospects they came out with out of the guys that haven't debuted yet. Obviously Mayo and Basayo high up there, but Matthew Etzel number 50 overall according to them, and Aaron Estrada number 65.
We'll go now into our final segment of the episode, where we shout out players outside the top 30 portion of our top 50 prospects list for something they've done recently, whether it's been a good game, a good week, or was there something interesting in their stat line that we want to note. And I'm going to go back to Nick to start this one, because he has a hitter who used to be pretty firmly inside of our top 30 and is actually on Fangraphs' overall list and now healthy, showing a little bit of a resurgence.
I forgot for a moment we were doing the segment. I have Reed Trimble as my bat. I put him on here because he didn't crack our top 50 update that we're going to do. I try to sneak him in there. 49 on my list. He didn't crack the overall top 50. Going back to Eric's list, I feel like he was pretty high on Trimble coming out of the draft, which is why he's hanging around. But there's good reason to keep following Reed Trimble because, like, he's hitting, where is this at? This doesn't include Monday night's game, which he did hit a home run before we recorded. So he has a 905 entering Monday, a 905 OPS in Aberdeen, more walks than strikeouts, up to now 11 extra base hits in 23 games. And it was actually, Bob made a good point on one of the dailies this week. He's never been caught stealing in his career, which is a fun stat. He's like 26 or 27 for 27. I don't know. He's healthy. He's finally healthy. He got drafted in 2021, didn't play, but, you know, a couple games draft year. The last 2 years, he's had two major surgeries and injuries. So he just hasn't played. And he's playing well. He's playing center field next to Enrique Bradfield Jr. tonight. Like, that's, I couldn't be more happy to see Trimble. I know before last season started, one of my bold prospect predictions was Reed Trimble is going to end 2023 as a top 10, 15 prospect. He ended like in a cast for like the second straight year. He's not going to get back up into that ranks, but he's healthy. He's still young-ish and intriguing, which is fun to see. And real quick, my pitcher is Nolan Hoffman. Hoffman having a resurgence in AAA, and I'm here for it. Last week, 5 1/3 innings, no runs, 2 hits, 3 walks, 8 strikeouts. If you go back to May 18th, Hoffman gave up 4 runs and walked 3 guys, recorded just 1 out. 3 days later, he gave up 3 runs, walked a batter, recorded just 2 outs. The ERA jumped from 3.65 to 8.10. Since then, he's pitched 17 1/3 innings, given up 0 runs with 27 strikeouts. 4 strikeouts in each of his last 3 outings, a lot of 2+ inning outings. I thought he was cooked, but it's a unique arm angle, and it'll be interesting if he continues to pitch well. Like, he's going to regress, obviously, because those are insane numbers over the last couple of weeks. If he continues to pitch well, like, does he get a shot at some point this year? And there you go, from Simpkin. Hoffman, before we recorded, got the save tonight in Durham, so still pitching well.
I will go straight into my pitcher, who is Brian Bautista. Big right-handed pitcher down in the FCL, 20 years old, 6'3", 175, they have him listed as. And he's been hanging around. He pitched in the DSL in 2022 to a 4.33 ERA, was in the FCL last year, had a 3.60 ERA over 20 innings. And this year, 25 1/3, he's got a 4.26 ERA, 3.29 FIP, 30 strikeouts to only 10 walks. I just feel like he's going to be the next guy that, whether it's late this year or to begin next year, is going to be in Delmarva and opening some eyes. But I just wanted to bring his name up to people's attention ahead of time and get ready for that. Got to prepare. And on the hitting side, I have 2 guys in the DSL who, one is repeating the level, Luis Guevara, who still just 18 years old. Would have liked to see him in the FCL, but I guess with only one team there, it was a little bit harder. But he's improved on all his numbers from last year. Last year, over 160 plate appearances, he batted 318 with an 824 OPS, 133 WRC plus. And this year, 67 plate appearances so far, he's batting 327. And I don't think this includes today's game. So actually, I have the updated stats for him right here. He's batting 340 with a 934 OPS, 5 doubles, 16 walks, 4 stolen bases. His walk rate has increased from 17.5%, which was already pretty great, to 22.4% this year. ISO's up a little bit. Strikeout rate is down 0.1%, 14.9%. So that's pretty good. 153 WRC plus before today's games. Can't wait to see what he does in the FCL next year. I think he's going to be a guy on the come up, another middle infielder. And also just Elvin Garcia. This is one of the new guys. He plays third base, a little bit of short. Probably going to be too big to stick at shortstop. But 17 years old in the DSL, over 67 plate appearances. And he's batting, again, I got to switch to the updated, 370 with an 1118 OPS, 7 doubles, 3 triples, 5 stolen bases. He's got a 204 WRC plus before today's game, 20.9% walk rate, 17.9% strikeout rate, 260 ISO without a home run. So clearly he's pretty fast, those triples. Just another intriguing infielder. Just add it to the list.
Always good to see the short season guys get a shout out, especially Bautista. He's been pretty solid this year. I'm going to go into my guys now, and I'm going to start with my pitcher, Lincoln Hensman. Hensman is fairly new to the Orioles system. And to give a little bit of background, he was drafted by the White Sox in the fourth round back in 2017 out of Louisville. Pitched in the White Sox system for a few years and reached AAA, but never got to the majors before being released last year. Then pitched most of the 2023 season in indie ball, the Atlantic League specifically. Then was with the Marlins at the beginning of this year, was with AA Pensacola before he got released by them at the end of May. He was pretty quickly signed by the Orioles and joined Bowie's bullpen. He had a rough go of it at first, but last week he pitched very well against Reading. Two outings in that series, he pitched a combined five scoreless innings with four strikeouts against one walk, gave up just one hit, also earned a win in Sunday's doubleheader as well as a save earlier in the week. My hitter, meanwhile, is Douglas Hodo, who had an excellent series against Brooklyn last week for Aberdeen, going 5-for-13 at the plate with seven walks, five RBIs, and that capped what was an excellent month of June for Hodo, who hit .262 and posted a .455 on-base percentage, thanks to the fact that he walked 19 times in 65 plate appearances. In fact, he walked as much as he struck out in the month of June, so greatly improving the walk-to-strikeout numbers and the rest of the offense climbing up with that for Hodo in his second go-around with the Ironbirds as he spent part of last year there.
Yeah, and I'm looking real quick. Hodo's got two walks tonight, but Reed Trimble has also doubled and homered and walked, so he's got a 972 OPS. There's still time for you guys to update your list before we officially record our top 50 update.
And we're just moments away from doing that. So if you are a member of our Patreon community, in fact, actually, by the time this hits the main feed on all the for podcast, you will have access to that already. So go check it out. If you're not a member of our Patreon community yet, sign up today and you'll get access to the top 50 prospects list at the $5 and $10 levels. You will also receive bonus daily coverage from Bob and myself. We will be back next week at a date and time to be announced. We're not going to be on Monday night as usual, but we'll have details for you over on social media. And you've got multiple places you can find us on social media, including Facebook, Instagram, Threads, X, TikTok, and YouTube. We're also over at Substack, OriolesOnTheVerge.substack.com. For Bob Phelan and Nick Stevens, this is Zach Spedden. You've been listening to Orioles on the Verge, presented by Bet Online and part of the Believe Podcast Network.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.